Oh, I took us down the wrong aisle. I took us down the crowded aisle. You got to be, like, physically fit to make it through this market.
Oh, yes. You,
I've had more than one old lady throw an elbow into my ribs since we got here.
Next week, millions of Asian Americans are going to celebrate Lunar New Year. Ahead of the holiday, I met up with Jia Young Fan, a writer at The New Yorker. We went to Deluxe Market in New York's Chinatown.
I think it's part of the shopping experience that's heightened in intensity around Chinese New Year.
I kind of like it, actually. It's kind of...
It is an exercise, right? Like, it's sort of... Yeah. You're really fighting for your food.
But it also taps into my Semitic ancestry, which I think there's an overlap there of these sort of, like, aggressive markets where people are, like, haggling and pushing and shoving.
I think it really helps you work up an appetite. Like, you've really, like, you've earned your food.
Yeah, it's, like, one step short of actual hunting.
This week on The Sporkful, we're ringing in Lunar New Year with a special focus on dumplings. Why? Well, food writer Clarissa Wei explained it to me like this.
The dumpling is shaped like an ingot, which is what the Chinese currency was, and it's kind of like gold. So the more dumplings you eat, the more gold you will have in your life.
Really?
Yes.
That sounds like a dare.
Yeah, they should have a dumpling eating contest.
I know, seriously. Yeah, and then they should track the financial success of those people over
yeah.
time.
Just to see if
I'll be the richest guy in China, I swear.
Coming up, Jia Young Fan thumbs her nose at filial piety. She'll finally say what she's wanted to say about her mom's dumplings all these years. Plus, she's going to talk about her family's reaction to the food when they first arrived in the U.S. from China.
Americans are really stupid when it comes to food. I mean, they're smart in a variety of other ways, but when it comes to food, they like the most zestless parts of any animal.
And later on, how do the principles of architecture and design apply to dumplings? I'll ask a bunch of dumpling-obsessed architects. Stick around. From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. And each week on our show, we obsess over the details of eating to uncover truths about food and people. Jia Young Fan and I met up at Deluxe Market, which is quite a scene in the lead-up to Lunar New Year, jam-packed with young professionals, old grandmas, and everyone in between. They stock a huge array of specialties from different regions of China. I scored myself a hefty portion of roast duck. Jia Young went home with a whole cuttlefish. She was 8 years old when she and her family came to the U.S. from Sichuan Province in China. She remembers celebrating Lunar New Year both in China and in the U.S., and it always involved dumplings.
Dumplings are not actually a dish. I mean, this is sacrilegious, that I particularly liked. During Chinese New Year, when it was served, that would usually be the only dish on offer in comparison to the variety of Sichuanese dishes that have much better and, I think, stronger, more intense flavor. I was always so confused because I enjoyed stir fry because you'd have such depth of flavor in every dish. And with dumplings, it just felt like biting into this, like, flavorless goo.
whoa, you guys. I gotta pull out the record scratch here. I'm cutting into the interview because I want to make sure that you understand the gravity of what Jia Young just said. All right, hating on dumplings at Lunar New Year is like hating on turkey at Thanksgiving. It's bold, okay? All right, back to the market.
So would you ever, like, speak up around the table and be like, Mom, Dad, I'm so sick of dumplings on New Year's. It's the worst.
Oh, no. I mean, if you know how important obedience is culturally in the rearing of your children and as a value to instill in your child, I couldn't even think about registering my lament. But it was very much how I felt. And it was a big to-do. The entire day was taken up with rolling the skins of the dumpling and chopping up the meat. So it was a whole day devoted to these, frankly, very subpar tasting dumplings.
Is your mom going to listen to this?
I hope so. I think finally, after 30 years, I'll have finally gathered the courage to say what I really think about her dumplings.
What are some of your earliest memories of celebrating the New Year after you came to the U.S.?
I think we tried to continue the tradition of eating dumplings, but I think I made a very valiant effort at loosening the rules of dumpling eating. And since we were no longer in a country where every other family were serving dumplings, I think I always requested eating out. But I think the one year that we ate home, we actually bought ground meat, which seemed groundbreaking, that we did not have to, because I remember my mother would just spend hours in front of the cutting board with a cleaver chopping up the meat, which seems sort of ludicrous, but you know, that was what all families did.
And when she finally broke down and bought ground beef, was it like...
Right, they were caught.
Was it like, this is great, you know, America is wonderful, or was it this sort of like sad acquiescence to giving up a tradition?
It was, well, like, why don't Americans like, you know, like, Americans are so foolish. Like, why is the fattier ground pork cheaper than the lean one? It was like all this confusion, because in dumplings, the fattier, I mean...
Well, in everything.
essentially, the more lard you have in there, the more delicious the dumpling. So obviously, those should be priced higher. And the fact that I think at some supermarkets, they only offered like lean or semi-lean ground pork. And that was frustrating.
You had to like hunt for the best meat.
Right.
What is wrong with them? They say like with chicken, like why is white meat chicken more expensive than chicken thighs?
I can write an essay about kind of the deplorable qualities of chicken breast. My family only wanted to buy chicken wings or chicken legs or like chicken heads, and that chicken breast was the most expensive cut of the chicken was baffling for us for a long time. It was like, what? Who are these people that value like literally the most tasteless part?
But I've been trying to keep it a secret though, because I want all these stupid white people to keep buying the worst cut of the chicken so that the good parts can be left for us and nice and cheap.
I don't think I've eaten like chicken breast for about 2 decades, but I remember the first time learning that when I visited a classmate's home, that the mother would like bake chicken breasts. It was just I was to be a polite guest. I had to stomach that. It was a revelation.
Have you thought about if and when you have kids, what customs you grew up with that you might want to pass on to them, and which ones you might let fall by the wayside?
I think we're cutting out wholesale dumpling eating and making. I think I will save my. I mean, unless my kids happen to be those who somehow inherit a taste for zestlessness, which will be unfortunate, but I will honor, because I am not a tiger parent. Hopefully I will not be one. And I will not force my palate upon them. I think I would really like to acquaint with them with different parts of the animal. I love chicken feet. I love innards, like hearts and kidneys. I would like my children not to be disgusted by the prospect, the way that kind of many of my American friends are. And I guess I would want my children to be more open.
That's Jia Young Fan. She's a writer at The New Yorker. You should follow her on Twitter. She's super funny and incisive. She's at Jia Young Fan. The other day, she tweeted this video of a stream of pandas coming down a trail, single file, and then all of a sudden, one of the pandas veers off in a totally different direction. And Jia Young captioned it, "Title of my next book, The Panda Who Wandered Off the Trodden Path." And that definitely applies to Jia Young. I mean, just look at her iconoclastic stance on dumplings. And it also applies to Clarissa Wei. She's the young food writer from LA that we heard at the top of the show. When I met up with Clarissa, I asked her about wandering off the trodden path. What do your parents think of your career choice as a food writer covering Chinese food?
They don't really acknowledge it. They know that I do it because like the Chinese newspaper around here did an article on me a while back, and they're like, "Oh, and like now I know what you do." But it's not really a career that's smiled upon within the Chinese culture, so they don't really acknowledge it.
It's interesting. I mean, I get what you're saying. I mean, it's maybe not a typical career path, especially in the Chinese community. But at the same time, like, you're doing a cool thing to, like, bring awareness to Chinese culture, which I would think is cool.
Yeah. So I think my parents are thrilled that I have a much more higher interest in the Chinese language and culture. And when I have questions, I'll ask them. And I am really passionate about teaching people a lot more about Chinese culture, because I think a lot of people will make these assumptions, or they'll approach Chinese food from an outsider's perspective and be like, oh, this is so exotic and weird, but it's like this has been part of, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. There are people in America who are both Chinese and American who can, like myself, teach people about these traditions and cultures.
So do you say that to your parents? Do you say, like, this is what I'm all about? Isn't this great?
My Chinese, I speak in Chinglish, and that means, like, Chinese English.
Right.
So, believe it or not, I have a hard time communicating with them on topics as abstract as that. But I think they get the gist. They subscribe to my newsletter, so I feel like they might, like, plug that into Google Translate and figure that out.
That's food writer Clarissa Wei. For a lot more of my interview with her, check out last year's Sporkful Lunar New Year episode. In that show, I also go out for chicken feet with the members of a satirical hip-hop group called Notorious MSG. They talk about their own battle against stereotypes, working in restaurants, and, of course, dumplings. That show came out last February. It's available now wherever you got this one. Coming up, our deep dive on dumplings continues when I sit down with a group of dumpling-obsessed architects. Can the principles of architecture and design make a better dumpling? We'll find out. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. I want to thank you guys for all the great response we've gotten to our new and improved email newsletter. It comes out once a week, and in each one, producer Ann Sandy and I will tell you what we're eating and what we're reading. Ann shared a recipe for an Indian flatbread called a paranta, which is delicious. I shared an article about superstar football quarterback Tom Brady's diet. It is crazy. Like, when he wants to treat himself and celebrate just a little bit, like if he wins the Super Bowl, he eats a banana. I would rather not win the Super Bowl than live like that. But anyway, I shared that article in the newsletter, and if you too want to know what Ann and I are eating and reading, please sign up now for the Sporkful newsletter. Go to sporkful.com/newsletter or send a text. Go ahead, just get your phone out right now and text Spork News to 69866. Now, let's get back to dumplings.
From even before I studied architecture, I've been definitely a dumpling lover. That my dad used to take us to Chinese restaurants, and that was always like the easy thing to order, and that would be my go-to thing. My name's Nora. I am a project manager here at ARO.
ARO is Architecture Research Office. They're architects who do a wide range of different kind of projects, from private homes to public parks to football stadiums. And they love dumplings.
I think about dumplings on a daily basis, and I have long, intimate history with dumplings, growing up eating them. I'm Korean, I'm used to Korean dumplings, but I've definitely ventured out into Chinatown to get my fair share of dumplings. I'm Jason, I'm also a project manager at ARO.
I brought a bunch of dumplings to a conference room at ARO. It was me, Nora, Jason, and Nick.
I'm Nick. I'm an architect and project manager at ARO. My experience with dumplings is probably less than my experience with architecture. My credentials are probably a little stronger on one side, but that said, I've always appreciated the fact that dumpling is kind of a lingua franca for the whole world. Like, everybody makes dumplings.
So why talk to architects about dumplings? Well, building a building and building a dumpling aren't so different.
The dumpling maker has a structural problem that they have to deal with for sure, where you have the skin has to be thin enough where you have the right ratio or the desired ratio of meat to skin, but strong enough to hold together.
It needs to be like strong and supple at the same time.
Exactly, so you have the skin, which is like a tensile element, and then you have the filling, which is like compressed and chewy, and it's supposed to be the payoff for biting into it.
Let's eat some dumplings, and we'll keep talking. Why don't you guys help yourselves here? Don't be shy now.
All right.
These are the soup dumplings down here underneath. Those two plastic containers are wontons,
which were starting to kind of stick together. So you may just have to get your hands in there and rip them apart. Don't be shy. We're all friends here.
Those are very unusual looking.
Yeah.
I have to say, very interesting.
Jason, I see that you went for a soup dumpling. So I have to ask you about your soup dumpling consumption technique. Now, I'll be honest, until I spent more time in New York, I had not had a soup dumpling. It's one of the less common dumplings. So for people out there who don't know, it's sort of a circular pouch. And it sounds crazy to say it, but inside the dumpling, there's soup. Hot soup wrapped inside a dumpling and a little piece of meat or crab or something. And typically, and the way they do it is that they chill the soup so that it becomes, because it's fatty, it gets solid, they wrap it, and then they heat it. And then when you get a soup dumpling, typically it's the liquid inside is very, very hot. And if you were to put that whole pouch in your mouth and bite into it, it will be unpleasant. So you need to have a strategy going in when you eat a soup dumpling.
Absolutely.
Jason, what's your strategy?
My strategy is I'll dip the soup dumpling in a little bit of soy sauce first and then put it on my soup spoon and then pierce the skin so that the soup leaks out and mixes with the soy sauce, and then I'll take a sip of the soup.
The broth mixed with the soy sauce.
Exactly, and then I'll pop the dumpling in and sort of finish off the soup as I
Nora, you're
bite
nodding.
Into it.
Yeah, I pretty much match that exact same sequence, except I don't necessarily put sauce on it at first. I'll almost just try a dumpling plain, and then subsequent dumplings, I'll use the sauce. But definitely, you have to poke the hole, let the steam out, let it cool down a little bit, and then you can go in.
I'm with you. You have to open it up somehow to let the soup cool. But I also love when you bite into a whole soup dumpling and you get that explosion.
Yeah.
You pierce through the dumpling skin and the soup hot soup comes pouring into your mouth and it's not too hot, but still. Remember that gum when you were a kid that had the liquid center?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's a great bubbly sensation.
Fruit gushers or something?
Yes.
No, exactly.
So here's what I do. I take a single chopstick and I go straight down through the middle and I twist like this.
Yeah.
And I might use my hands a little bit to pull it apart, and that opens the top while keeping all the liquid inside. And now I've got that, and I can let it cool. I can even blow on the top, and then I can pick it up and eat the whole thing.
Interesting.
Oh, the explosion.
Really good.
So good.
I'm going to try that.
Pretty good, right? Pretty good for a white guy from New Jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. You missed your calling as an architect, too,
What type of building or architectural principle can you equate to what we're seeing here with soup dumplings?
In architecture, I mean, in any building, you need to keep water out pretty much because it will cause major damage if it gets in. And so there's all this care taken with details and pretty much diverting water away from buildings. And I think in this case, it's interesting. It's about a seal and having a good seal, whether it's the building or in this case, the dumpling, because you don't want any of that soup to leak out. So there's definitely, to me, a correlation of wanting to keep, in this case, liquid in. But in architecture, you want to keep liquid out.
So what are some things that you can do to help ensure a good seal on a building? And what can those teach us about dumplings?
Well, one, there's a kind of fundamental way of joining materials in a way. When you put two together, there's a certain way that makes sense for water, and it has to do with gravity and the way water moves down a building. So in general, you kind of want one thing to go over another thing.
That's why you have an overhang around the perimeter. The roof overhangs the...
And that's why, you know, clavered siding or siding on a building, it always has one piece on top of the other. You don't often see it the other way around. So there's an inherent directionality to a wall of a building. The same way I think a dumpling has an inherent directionality. Those are kind of our primary principles that no matter how fancy you get with your systems, they're probably not a bad idea to adhere to. So let's say you had the ultimate crimping technique, you were a master and you could crimp your dumpling perfectly. It still doesn't mean necessarily you should put it upside down, you know?
Right. If you could design a new kind of dumpling, what would it be?
I threw out the idea of 3D printing a dumpling. I think that'd be interesting.
What would you hope to learn from that? How would you hope to change dumplingdom with a 3D printer?
I think you could bring a certain precision into it. I'm not saying that would make it better, but I think you could explore different things. You could, with precision accuracy, make a wall thicker and then 3/4 of an inch later, make it a little bit thinner, and do that with a high degree of precision. So it's fundamentally different from the way they've been made.
One thing that might work is if you introduce like an additional layer, whether it's a texture layer or whether the outside is fried but the inside stays soft.
I was just like, thinking.
Just to add another dimension to it.
Because now you get the variety really comes in the filling often, you know, different types of filling. And there are definitely variations in shape and form, but I would maybe look at the skin and see, are there other types of skins that could come into play? And I like the layering.
Double, maybe you could dip it in something else that somehow adds another dynamic to it. I don't know.
Maybe you could take a steamed dumpling and wrap it in a second skin and then, fry it.
Absolutely.
So you get crispy exterior and doughy interior.
Absolutely.
Has someone thought of that already?
I believe Taco Bell thought of that.
That's Nora, Jason, and Nick from Architecture Research Office. Check them out at aro.net. Reminder that you can listen to last year's Sporkful Lunar New Year show. It's in the feed now, wherever you got this episode. And please remember to sign up for our email newsletter so you know what we're eating and what we're reading. Go to sporkful.com/newsletter or text SPORKNEWS to 69866. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sanny and me. Engineering help today from Ed Haber. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Joanna Solotaroff and Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Doug Manley in Newark, Delaware, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.